TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. This program is dedicated to the memory of Chernobyl, 25 years after April 26, 1986. Anybody who does even a cursory check on the internet looking for Chernobyl birth defects, Chernobyl cancer, Chernobyl liquidators, Chernobyl thyroid, comes up with moving and shocking data and images, especially for children. Just to name one film, Children of Chernobyl shows heartbreaking birth defects and volunteer medical aid to children born with holes in their hearts. Children who will not survive unless they get surgery and who live in Belarus or the Ukraine, countries so burdened with the ongoing problems of the unending aftermath of Chernobyl that they are unable to give help to all who need it. And it is these children mostly I think about when I keep hearing these statistics from the IAEA and the World Health Organization and from writers such as George Monbiot on Democracy Now, who claim that only 30 or maybe 65 people died of the consequences of Chernobyl. In part one of this program, I explained some of the reasons why all UN organizations, the IAEA and the WHO, and also the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, downplay the effects of Chernobyl. They are committed to promoting nuclear power and are fighting now doubly against the upwelling of doubt, questions, sorrow, and anger arising from Fukushima. The main purpose of this program is to introduce a book that was almost impossible to get until now, April 2011. It is a compilation of scientific papers that were collected by Dr. Alexei Yablokov, member of the Russian Academy of Science, and Vasily Nestorenko, former director of the Belarusian Nuclear Center. The title is Chernobyl: Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. Yablokov and Nestorenko review and present abstracts of over 1,000 titles and more than 5,000 printed and internet publications, mostly in Slavic languages, and written on the ground in Belarus, the Ukraine, and Western Russia, the countries most affected by the catastrophe. They collected the data hoping in vain that the WHO, IAEA, and the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation would review and include them in the data upon which they based their findings of little or no effect. Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, was published in 2009 in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences and ignored. The report is no longer available from the Academy. However, the authors and editor are now, April 2011, offering the book for free as PDF file, and they're placing a new print run back into circulation. The extensive section on health effects offers a whole new view of the consequences of radiation-induced disease. Yes, there are cancers to specific organs. Many thyroid cancers caused by iodine-131 and 129. But there are also diseases that affect body systems, such as the whole endocrine system, not just the thyroid, or the immune system, the respiratory and the reproductive systems. Diseases that do not necessarily kill, but fundamentally change a body, even into future generations. The other surprise for uninitiated readers is the environmental section. The research on rivers and lakes, the soils and the grains and vegetables growing there, wild and domestic animals, etc., show how they are all affected by the long-lived radioactive isotopes that now begin their own deadly journey through the ecosystems, bioconcentrating in animals and plants, being secreted, traveling with water and wind, sinking into the ground to be taken up again by root systems, ending up in the leaves and evaporating or being eaten by wild animals or humans to begin the deadly cycle again. You might say at this point, how is that possible? The Chernobyl explosion occurred 25 years ago. Many of the radioactive isotopes must have become harmless. Well, yes, any isotope with a half-life of 2.5 years or less will have lost its danger unless it got inside a body and has begun to do its damage before it expired. However, from a partial list of about 75 radioactive isotopes that are associated with nuclear reactions, just over 30 will have decayed within 25 years. Among them, iodine-131, which will last for 80 days. The other isotopes are still active, and some will last in the environment for several hundred thousand years. Their so-called half-lives are listed in the charts of radioactive elements. These half-lives need to be multiplied by 10 to come up with their entire lifespan. Actually, scientists who use the precautionary principle multiply by 20. But I'll use 10 for here. The cesium-137 from Chernobyl that fell on the United States will last for another 275 years. The most deadly isotope, and one that gets produced in nuclear reactors in large quantities, and also is the perfect material for nuclear weapons, is plutonium-239. Plutonium-239 will be around for 2 million years. UN agencies and writers who say that we all have lived with radiation from sun and soil since time immemorial do not take into account that we, as a part of creation, had 1 to 2 million years to evolve under that radiation. And most of the 200-plus radioactive isotopes from nuclear power, including plutonium, are entirely new isotopes, results of the man-made splitting of atoms. Our collective bodies have only known them since August 1945. In her book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, Dr. Helen Caldicott explains so well the disease-causing mechanism of radiation that I'm quoting her here. Billions of years ago, the Earth was relatively radioactive and hostile to life, as radiation emanated both from the terrestrial plane, from rocks and soil, and from powerful solar radiation in space. The solar effect was much more intense at that time, because the ozone layer that filters out the carcinogenic ultraviolet radiation from the sun was almost non-existent. Over billions of years, as plants developed and evolved, they generated oxygen from photosynthesis, which rose up through the lower layers of the atmosphere into the stratosphere, where it was converted to ozone by ultraviolet light. Gradually, as the ozone layer accumulated in the upper atmosphere, the intensity of the solar radiation diminished, as did the terrestrial radiation, and the Earth cooled down. Background radiation was one of the main instigators of evolution, and it induced mutations in the reproductive DNA molecules or genes of plants and animals. The vast majority of mutations were deleterious, causing death and disease in the offspring, but some were advantageous, allowing the new organisms to flourish in a hostile and difficult environment. As the Earth cooled down and background radiation decreased, genetic mutations decreased in frequency, and species adjusted to this change. But human beings seem determined to alter the stable balance bequeathed to us by nature, with only the barest comprehension of evolution or the delicate process of genetics. We create massive quantities of new radioactive elements to power our lifestyle because we are attached to ever-increasing levels of technological progress, prosperity, luxury, and ease of living. When human beings succeeded in splitting atoms, they also embarked upon a process that would inevitably increase the levels and diversity of background radiation on the Earth. The process of fissioning uranium in nuclear reactors creates more than 200 new man-made radioactive elements. Some live for only seconds, some remain radioactive for millions of years. Once created, these diabolical elements will inevitably find their way into the environment and will eventually enter the reproductive organs of plants, animals, and humans, where they will mutate the genes in reproductive cells to cause disease and death in the immediate generation, or pass a hidden genetic disease to distant offspring down the time track. That was a long quote from Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming by Helen Caldicott. Belarus, the Ukraine, and Western Russia received the most concentrated fallout from the explosion at Chernobyl. Almost 50% fell on that area alone. The other 50+% dispersed over most of the Northern Hemisphere. And you heard the long list of affected countries and continents in part one of this program. Even though the northern and southern hemisphere of the globe have their separate air circulation systems, the fallout was so intense that cesium-137 was found in the Antarctic, near the South Pole, in snow that fell from 1987 to 1988. And this mind-boggling fact was reported in 2000 by the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. They, as a rule, downplay the effects of Chernobyl. Yablokov and Nestorenko said in the introduction that since Chernobyl, it has become clear that there's a greater danger than nuclear weapons concealed within nuclear power. Emissions from this one reactor contaminated half the globe. No citizen of any country can be assured that he or she can be protected from radioactive contamination. Contrary to the common view that the Chernobyl plumes contained mostly light and gaseous radionuclides, which would disappear without a trace in the Earth's atmosphere, the available facts indicate that even plutonium was found thousands of kilometers from Chernobyl. The authors also say that, until now, the uneven, spotty distribution of the Chernobyl radioactive fallout has attracted too little attention. Aerogamma studies, upon which most maps of contamination are based, give only average values of radioactivity. Therefore, small, local, highly radioactive hotspots can exist without being marked. For example, public health services of the French department Vosges found that a hog hit by a local hunter was glowing. Experts armed with Geiger counters conveyed a message even more disturbing. Practically, the entire mountain where the dead animal had just run is radioactive at a level of 12,000 to 24,000 becquerel per meter square. For comparison, the European norm is 600 becquerels per meter square. Unexpected hotspots and the movement of radionuclides through the environment present additional dangers to human beings, especially those who still live in the contaminated areas. The risks are even greater when the radionuclides are inhaled or eaten on milk or vegetables, fish or meat, and lodge in the body and irradiated from the inside as so-called internal emitters. And here's a little aside by me. Throughout this report, I found surprising references to radiation decreasing and then suddenly going up again. Here's the first one. The powerful alpha radiation emitter, americium-241, formed as a result of the natural disintegration of plutonium-241, is a very important factor in the increasing levels of contamination in many areas located up to 1,000 kilometers from Chernobyl. The territory contaminated by plutonium today, where the level of alpha radiation is usually low, will again become dangerous as a result of the future disintegration of plutonium-241 to americium-241 in the ensuing tens and even hundreds of years. In all cases where territories heavily contaminated by Chernobyl radionuclides are compared with less contaminated areas that are similar in ethnography, economy, demography, and environment, there's increased morbidity in the more contaminated territories, increased numbers of weak newborns, and increased impairment and disability. Certainly, there's no direct proof of the influence of the Chernobyl catastrophe on these figures. But the question is, what else can account for the increased illness and disability that coincide precisely in time and with increased levels of radioactive contamination, if not Chernobyl? The IAEA and WHO suggested that the increased morbidity is partly due to social, economic, and psychological factors. Socioeconomic factors cannot be the reason, because the compared groups are identical in social and economic position, natural surroundings, age composition, etc., and differ only in their exposure to Chernobyl contamination. And now, on over 110 pages following this statement, diseases are listed and sources are quoted, sometimes four, sometimes as many as a dozen different studies per page, and there are several pages given to each disease. The saddest part is the section on genetic disorders, chromosome damage, mutations, Down syndrome studies, even from outside Belarus and the Ukraine, and the apparent increase in these diseases. And this is Alexei Yablokov writing. Adverse effects as a result of Chernobyl irradiation have been found in every group that has been studied. Brain damage has been found in individuals directly exposed, liquidators and those living in the contaminated territories, as well as in their offspring. Premature cataracts, tooth and mouth abnormalities, and blood, lymphatic, heart, lung, gastrointestinal, urologic, bone, and skin diseases afflict and impair people, young and old alike. Endocrine dysfunction, particularly thyroid disease, is far more common than might be expected, with some 1,000 cases of thyroid dysfunction for every case of thyroid cancer, a marked increase after the catastrophe. There are genetic damage and birth defects, especially in children of liquidators and children born in areas with high levels of radioisotope contamination. Immunological abnormalities and increases in viral, bacterial, and parasitic diseases are rife among individuals in the heavily contaminated areas. Here are the comments on the endocrine system. The Chernobyl radiation is genetically much more dangerous than that released in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, as the quantity of radionuclides emitted from the Chernobyl meltdown was several hundredfold higher, and there were more different kinds of radionuclides. diseases of the endocrine system. Radioactive fallout from Chernobyl has had serious effects on every part of the endocrine system. The pituitary gland actively incorporates radioactive iodine at levels 5 to 12 times higher than normal. The two major portions of the endocrine system were over-irradiated during the iodine period, the first weeks after the catastrophe. And that would be a consideration now for Fukushima. And continuing the quote, all physiological functions, such as the onset of puberty, that are dependent on organs of internal secretion, the pancreas, parathyroid, thyroid, and the adrenal glands, and the ovaries and the testes, which control multiple functions, must coordinate to sustain normal development. Thus, Chernobyl's radioactive contamination has adversely impacted the function of the entire endocrine system. Here's the section on immune system diseases, just the introduction, so it's not becoming too technical. You can all look it up on the PDF that's on TUC Radio's website, TUCradio.org. Okay, here they write, the lymphatic system, the bone marrow, spleen, lymph nodes, etc., has been impacted by both large and small doses of ionizing radiation from the Chernobyl fallout. As a result, the quantity and activity of various groups of lymphocytes, and thus the production of antibodies, including various immunoglobulins, stem cells, and thrombocytes, are altered. The suppression of immunity as a result of this radioactive contamination is known as Chernobyl AIDS. Here's the first paragraph for the section on urogenital tract diseases and reproductive disorders. Irradiation directly damages the kidneys, bladder, and urinary tract, as well as the ovaries and testicles, which not only are subject to direct radiation effects, but are indirectly affected through hormonal disruption. These disorders in structure and function result in damage to the reproductive process. Bone and muscle diseases. Just the first paragraph. Osteoporosis, the decreasing density of bone tissue, results from an imbalance between the formation of bone and the natural reabsorption process. Such imbalance results from either hormonal disorder or direct damage by irradiation to the cellular predecessors of osteoclasts and osteoblasts. Everywhere in areas contaminated by Chernobyl radioactivity, increased numbers of children have been born with hereditary anomalies and congenital developmental malformations, including previously rare multiple structural deformities of the limbs, head, and body. The occurrence of congenital malformations continues to increase in several of the contaminated territories and correlates with the levels of irradiation. This was a synopsis of the diseases caused by irradiation. All this documented research stands up to the IAEA. The International Atomic Energy Agency states with great assurance on the April 2011 website, there is no scientific evidence of increases in overall cancer incidence or mortality rates or in rates of non-malignant disorders that could be related to radiation exposure. Yablokov and Nestorenko say, only when we know the full scope of the Chernobyl catastrophe can we prevent such a tragedy from ever happening again. That was a reading from Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. The lead author is Dr. Alexei Yablokov. He's a prominent Russian scientist, environmentalist, former member of the Soviet Union Parliament, and environmental advisor to the Gorbachev administration. He's a corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Science and currently serves as Nuclear and Radiation Safety Program Chair for the International Socio-Ecological Union. He's also one of the leaders of the Russian environmental movement and the author of over 400 scientific papers and books. This book was nearly completed when the other lead author, Vasily Nestorenko, passed away in August 2008. Nestorenko had given up his bright career as nuclear design engineer and as director of the Belarusian Nuclear Center to dedicate his life to protecting humankind from Chernobyl's radioactive danger. A photo online shows him at a daily vigil outside WHO headquarters in Geneva, holding up a sign denouncing the suppression by the WHO of the evidence for the grave consequences of the radioactive fallout from Chernobyl. With the help of the U.S. editor and medical doctor Jeanette Sherman, the book was published in 2009 in the annals of the New York Academy of Sciences and promptly ignored. However, the authors and editor are now, as of April 2011, offering the book for free as PDF file, and they're placing a new print run back into circulation. This is essential information for all of us who want to make sense of the Fukushima disaster and make an informed decision as to what to do about nuclear power and the so-called nuclear renaissance. So come back for the next broadcast, order the book, or download the PDF file via a link on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.